it's to Porirua that we head now. Our guest, Jess Barnes, is helping transform a neglected bowling green in Porirua to an urban vegetable garden. The produce from the garden is used in community cooking classes run by Well Fed, located in the old bowling club kitchen. Jess also runs her own business in Te Tahi Bay called Sunshine in a Bottle, where she collects household food scraps to turn into compost. And while the COVID-19 restrictions have put a stop to collections for now, she's encouraging everyone she can to use the lockdown period to start their own home compost. Jen, good morning. Jess, good morning.
Hi.
Sorry.
All good.
Hey, I wanted to start with the compost. Actually, what a great idea. We've had all our routines mucked around with, haven't we? And people have spent a lot of time at home.
Yes.
Why don't we kick off with that? If you want to do that small time at home now, what's involved in getting started with some home composting?
Yes, composting is the best thing you can do for your garden and for the environment. And it's what's fun about it, it's like it's a science experiment that you get to know over time. But there's four key components that any compost will need. You're going to need your nitrogen, so that's your food scraps. You're going to need carbon, so that's things like dried grass, wood mulch, straw, shredded newspaper, egg cartons or toilet rolls, pretty much anything that will break down in your garden that is a dry material, water and air, and then something to put it in. So it can be, something that you get from Mind of 10, those kind of plastic bins, but it also can just be a pile. So if you have a kind of big enough space where you can start to build up a pile, mixing your browns and your greens, your nitrogens and your carbons, you can make compost. It's as simple as that. And just getting to know it, you'll know things are going wrong when it's starting to smell kind of funny. Then you know you have a bit too much nitrogen, so you're going to add some more shredded newspaper. If nothing's really happening, then you know you're a bit too high on the carbon, so you're going to put in some more nitrogen. Things that work really well to speed it up can be coffee grounds, just because they're very small, so they break down faster. If you have chickens, adding chicken manure, that breaks down really, really fast and will heat up your bin really, really well and kind of speed up that composting process. And cutting your food small will also make a difference in kind of speeding up that process. If you're concerned about rats, and this time of year they are coming out a little bit, there's tons of great resources through Sustainability Trust and just, online. You can find all sorts of ways to rat-proof your bin if that's a concern in your area.
Great stuff. Now, your own business, Sunshine in a Bottle, mm-hmm. How does that work?
Yeah, so it's very much modeled off of KaiCycle in Wellington. I went on a bike tour to go see them last year and was just so inspired about what they're doing. I was like, I could get that started in the Te Tahi Bay. So at the moment, if you sign up for my compost pickup, I would get you a bucket and you fill your bucket. And then once a week, I come and take away that bucket full of kitchen scraps and drop off a clean bucket. Simple as that. Then I take that bucket of food waste and I actually bring it to the farm that I manage out on that old bowling green. And that's where I do a lot of the composting, because we have a really, really big system that works exceptionally well to compost a whole lot of different things. So that's a partnership between Sunshine in a Bottle Composting, my business, and For the Better Good, which is the social enterprise that kind of was one of the partners that got started on the farm.
How did this begin, the bowling club? When did it stop being a bowling club?
Oh, it's not a bowling club anymore. I was there this morning and everything is just looking so fantastic after all that rain. So around this time last year, maybe February last year, was when the first compost bins came onto the bowling green. And that came about because For the Better Good, which makes compostable water bottles, they needed somewhere to compost them because they take a lot of those bottles back and then compost them. So we're kind of closing that loop. And Well Fed kind of met and saw this kind of mutual purpose. So the bowling green kind of had the start as a composting space, and then kind of realizing that it was big and flat and got tons of sun, it would be perfect for an urban farm. So kind of fast forward about six, 7 months later, and in October of last year is when we built our first beds. We actually had Winley School and Holy Family School come to help plant out the first seedlings. So we planted greens and peas and what else did we plant? Tomatoes, kumara, melons. We planted heaps and heaps of food. And having the kids there was really neat. And we're hoping to engage them even more as the garden develops. And from there, we've just kind of kept on growing. We planted 28 fruit trees. By the end of kind of the winter, I should have about 33 garden beds, all producing a range of food from greens to spring onions, peas, beets, lots of different root vegetables, a real diverse range of foods, as well as lots of beneficial flowers to help attract good insects. And also it looks really, really beautiful.
You've come a long way in a very short time, and I want to talk a bit more about stages you go through if you want to achieve that. We all have our dream of our amazing urban garden, but it's not as simple as just, you know, bunging a few pots in the ground, a few things in the ground. I am curious, though, so was the I'm just curious of how the cooperation has worked and financially how it's worked. Was it the case that For the Better Good ended up owning the former site, or has it been leased to them? How did that initiative get pulled together?
Yeah, so WellFed was able to get a grant, and that paid for my wages as well as tools for the garden. And For the Better Good is also supporting through composting. So it's a lease situation. So the Bowling Green itself actually belongs to the council, and it's being leased by WellFed. And then there's a partnership with For the Better Good.
So everyone's getting together to make it happen. I think it's called Hampshire Gardens now, is it?
Yes, Hampshire Gardens. That's right. So it's on Hampshire Street.
Keep it simple. Exactly. Everyone knows where to go. The other question I have is Bowling Greens, but like golf courses and other former, you know, manicured within an inch of their life grounds are notorious, aren't they? They need some remediation, do they not, with, you know, some of the pesticides that would have been used, or, you know, what was involved in getting it ready for the first planting?
Yeah, so that was the first thing that was tested, was if there was any residual herbicides, pesticides, etc. And there was not. It has not been used for a really long time as a bowling green. It had mostly just been mowed. I think it was 7 years ago that it kind of stopped being a bowling green and was mostly just a field. So in that time, it had leached out. There wasn't any evidence of anything that we are concerned about. The soil itself is interesting in that it's very, very compacted. So it's kind of a learning process on how to work with soil that really is not meant for growing food crops. It's meant for growing grass. And we do a lot of things like cover cropping, which is just basically planting a whole diversity of plants that do a lot of different things for the soil. So it's plants that have deep roots that help to break up this really condensed soil, as well as root plants that kind of bring nitrogen from the air and put it into the soil to allow that really nice growth, and to balance out the nutrients in the soil, and to kind of protect it from the really dry summer we had. So there was a lot of cover cropping to help protect that soil because it dries out very, very fast, just being the way it's structured. There's lots of sand, very compacted, but it's super flat and gets lots of sun. And with all this kind of remedial work of just working with the soil and allowing it to kind of restore itself, I'm seeing huge improvements. I saw so many worms today when I was kind of digging and weeding and putting in some more plants. And that is so satisfying to see, because that is such a good indicator that the soil's coming back, that there's a diversity of life within that soil, and that's what's going to support your plants.
And that takes time, right? As you said, this is the role of the compost and the role of mulch as well, is just season after season after season to give it the chance to restore and to get those natural biological processes happening. So then there's the planting, and what determined what you would plant when and where? What was your plan?
Yeah, so it has shifted a little bit over the past kind of 2 months. So we kind of have two models. We have We were growing food for well-fed while also wanting that garden to be sustainable financially. So it was actually the last week of March was going to be our first delivery to a restaurant. That didn't happen. So we're doing a bit of a pivot and going to be doing end time kind of a CSA style box, which is really exciting. So we'll have kind of food going into the well-fed kitchen for the cooking classes, as well as this model that will allow the garden to be sustainable and continue on and doing lots of different things. You know, what I envision in the future is being able to do a lot more workshops on site about doing seed swaps and plant sales, like all sorts of ways of bringing community into that garden space. And it is open to anyone, not right now, but when we're in level two, it's open for anyone to go visit the garden and just hang out. It's not a private space. It's very much a public space. And that's kind of delightful. Like I know sometimes people are spending time in there in the afternoons or in the evenings, just hanging out in the garden. And I think that's really wonderful. So that's where we're going. Community space.
Well-fed had been operating out of the kitchen at the bowling club for several years. So was this their idea in some ways that the cooking classes, wouldn't it be great to use garden produce just from right outside? Was that the genesis?
Yeah. I wasn't part of the team yet when this kind of came about. I was hired on a little bit later, but that was definitely a big part of the motivation for having the garden there is having the learners participate in the garden, as well as having directly food coming directly from the garden into the kitchens. And then we're kind of right now we're looking at different ways of supporting the learners. So the people who are doing the cooking classes to garden for themselves as well. So being able to provide them with supplies and then having right now it's phone calls with me and the learners on how to get their home garden going as well. So just finding all sorts of different ways of getting fresh food into families' homes and doing it in a way that's sustainable and within a budget.
These are remarkable times to be doing it, though, obviously with the lockdown, but also what we are hearing more and more is just this, you know, ramping up of the need for food parcels and for support in every community, really. And has that been, have you pivoted to that a little bit at the moment?
Yeah, so we I was able to put together some food bags from the garden of greens. The first week was I was able to give them watermelons and pumpkins and different greens and celery. So lots of really fresh food that I would have picked that morning and then deliver to families who were having a hard time and just kind of having this fresh food delivered to their doorstep, which was really cool. And then we're still doing that with delivering greens to those families. So that's kind of keeping up with giving fresh food as much as we possibly can within kind of the limits of our production capacity.
You're on essential service status at the moment. When do you hope, correct, I guess, and what will happen when levels change? A lot of people are going to be busting to get out there, aren't they? And I imagine a beautiful new community garden would be a place people would be very, very keen to get back to.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to having level two. It's been interesting being totally on my own in the garden for so many weeks. So once we're at a point where we can start welcoming people into the space, you know, having volunteer days where people can come and hang out in the garden and learn, as well as kind of get their hands dirty and have a chance to kind of have conversations about their own gardens as well, and support people to garden as well as to compost, and talking through our compost systems and just connecting with the community and welcoming them into the space will be a big priority once we're able to, whenever that happens, hopefully next week.
Yeah. Jess, what's your own background before starting the business and then becoming involved in this initiative as well? What was your own background?
I did some urban farming in Canada, in Toronto with Fresh City Farms, and had a business with a friend where we grew herbs in backyards. So I've always kind of been somewhat connected in different ways. And then we moved to New Zealand, I guess, 4 years ago, give or take. And I was working in Garden Center for a little while when my kids were really little. And then when this opportunity came up, I jumped on it. It's my favorite place to be. It's a joy. And there was one learner who was really excited to grow watermelons. And when classes were still running earlier in the year, every day that she was in class, she would come out and take a picture of her watermelon. And she said that was one of the best parts of her day, was seeing her watermelon grow. And that's so satisfying to know that that gave her some delight, that there is delight in seeing things grow, and they will continue to grow even through lockdown. And I can't wait for people to come back and see the difference in the garden.
I may have been guilty of photo tracking my experimental Jersey beanie growth that way.
Oh, no.
There were some big ones and there were some very small ones. Hey, one question before you go. Could you indicate, please, whether to put black plastic compost box in the sun or shade? I live in cold Christchurch, says Susie.
I would put it into the shade. The reason being that it might be cold right now, but during the summer, if it gets too hot and dries out, that's really going to slow everything down. Because it's not the sun that's heating your compost. It's the activity of the bacteria within your compost that are doing all that busy work breaking down food. And that's what warms up the compost. Kind of like how when we start to exercise and emit heat, bacteria emits heat when they do their work. You'd rather make sure that it stays moist so the bacteria doesn't go dormant, rather than trying to heat it from the sun and it drying out.
And bacteria can resist even Christchurch level frosts, by the sounds of it.
Indeed. There's these great pictures of compost in like northern hemisphere, like wintry, minus 30. And you'll see the compost steaming because it's still so hot, because there's so much activity still happening right at the core of that compost. So the external temperature isn't as relevant as much as the balance within the compost and letting the magic happen there.
Thank you, Jess. Great to talk. Jess Barnes, who has a business called Sunshine in a Bottle, has also been involved in this urban vegetable garden project, Hampshire Gardens, it's now called, at the old bowling club. And the cooking classes are run by Wellfeed, which leases the old bowling club kitchen. Great initiative.